We left off talking about the fear of death. And I'm going to start there, where we left off last week in Hebrews 2:15, which reads, "For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself likewise took part of the same, that through death he might destroy him that had the power of death, that is, the devil, and deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage." Now, last week, where we had got to is this subject right here. We had talked about how whoever commits sin is the servant of sin, and how what Adam did essentially in the garden when he listened to the serpent and ate of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, that what he essentially did was changed families. He changed families. He changed God the Father and made Satan his father. Because it's a biblical principle, whosoever commits sin is the servant of sin. So Satan became the illegitimate stepfather of mankind. Really, I think would be a good way to put it. I also explained how the devil didn't get Adam's authority. There's kind of a misconception, I think, about that. Adam didn't have the authority to sublet this earth to Satan. He didn't have that authority. And I mentioned last week how if you're leasing a property, unless it's written in your contract, you're not allowed to sublet. That's a principle, and it's pretty much consistent around the world with leasing. Unless it's written in your contract, you're not allowed to sublet. So Satan didn't get man's authority. What he got was man's family. It would be akin to me leasing a house like I did in California for 7 years and me kicking out one person out of the house and inviting someone else in. That's what Adam did when he sinned. Was he kicked God out the planet and invited Satan in. Now, sin, the wages of sin is death. I don't want to spend too much time recapping this because we talked about it last week, but the wages of sin is death. When Adam sinned, he let Satan in to the planet, into his house, and Satan brought death with him, the curse, the result of sin. And from that moment forward, death reigned. But death, Satan, who has the power of death, according to this verse, couldn't just kill people willy-nilly, couldn't just do whatever he wanted. He didn't get Adam's authority in the earth. He just became Adam's stepfather. He still had to work through Adam to do anything here. Does everybody understand that? So he wasn't just able to take the earth. Didn't work that way. If he could have, he'd have just killed Adam outright. At that point in time, that's it, that's all, it would have been over with, and you and I wouldn't be having this conversation today. Isn't that right? Okay, so let's go on from there. I want to tackle the first major tradition, and we touched this just a little bit last week, but who's responsible for evil? Now, I made the statement last week, and you all agreed with me. Of course, consensus proves nothing. Just because we agree on something doesn't make it right. But the Bible does prove something. And I know I'm kind of preaching to the choir on this, but I asked you if God kills people, and you all told me no. No, God's good. We know that. God is good. Every good and perfect gift comes down from the Father of lights, in whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Right? It's the thief that cometh not but to steal and to kill and to destroy. Jesus said, "I am come that you might have life and that you might have it more abundantly." But if God doesn't kill or execute the curse upon people, now this is a rhetorical question, you don't have to answer me because I'm going to answer it myself, but it's just a rhetorical question for you to think about. If God doesn't kill or execute the curse upon people, then how come the Old Testament is full of places that says he does? That is, in the Old Testament, and even some places in the New, God takes responsibility for evil, for death, or for the curse in all its forms. Some examples: the angel of the Lord killing thousands of Israel's enemies on more than one occasion. To people being struck with leprosy, or the ground swallowing people up. To being afflicted by evil spirits from God. To God being the creator of evil itself. That's in Isaiah 44. There are multiple and continual references to God doing such things in the Bible. So did God really do all those things? Like I said, that's a rhetorical question. We already answered that, but it seems a little confusing sometimes, doesn't it? The answer, of course, is no, and I'm going to prove it to you. There is a principle in the Old Testament, and I want to be careful how I say this, but there is a principle in the Old Testament that has God taking responsibility for all things, both good and bad, because he is the creator. There are two reasons for this. One, the hardness of man's heart. The hardness of man's heart. And two, the mystery of the gospel. And I'm going to explain both of those to you. The hardness of man's heart and the mystery of the gospel. And this is what we're going to camp on here for the first part of this message. First, the hardness of man's heart. This issue came up in the ministry of Jesus. You know, the Pharisees and the religious leaders of the day were continually trying to tempt him, trying to get him to say something wrong, trying to get him to make a mistake. And the Pharisees came to Jesus one time and they asked him if it was lawful for one to put away one's wife. Jesus asked them a question. He said, "What did Moses command you?" The Pharisees answered him, "Moses suffered us or allowed us to write a bill of divorcement and to put her away." Jesus answered and said, this is Mark 10:5. Can everybody see this? Can we read this all aloud, please? Jesus said, "For the hardness of your heart, he wrote you this precept." That's what Jesus said. He said, "Because of the hardness of your heart, he wrote you this precept." But from the beginning of creation, it was not so. "For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and cleave unto his wife, and the two shall be one flesh. What therefore God hath put together, let no man put asunder." That was the rest of that verse, what Jesus said. So here we find a principle, an insight, a key, if you will, to the Old Testament. The Old Testament was written to men with hardened hearts. The Old Testament was written to men with hardened hearts. See, under the Old Testament, nobody was born again. Nobody was born again. Nobody received a recreated, regenerated human spirit until after the resurrection of Christ. Isn't that right? So people under the Old Covenant, they could honor and serve God if they so chose, but they couldn't be born again. They still had a dead spirit. God had to speak and deal with those people as dead spirits. There's a lot of things that God said in the Old Testament that, while true, are not all the truth, because there was a veil over men's hearts. Two, the mystery of the gospel. The other reason why God took responsibility for things in the Old Covenant that he himself didn't actively do. Paul gives us this second reason in Romans 16. Now to him that is of power to establish you according to my gospel and the preaching of Jesus Christ, according to the revelation of the mystery. Everybody say the mystery. Which was kept secret since the world began. See, there's a mystery that God kept secret from the very beginning of the world. 1 Corinthians chapter 2. But we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, even the hidden wisdom, which God ordained before the world unto our glory. Now, and here's the key. This is the reason why. Which none of the princes of this world knew. For had they known it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. See, there's a reason why God hid the gospel message. Why he hid it, why it was hard to find, why there was a veil over the old covenant. And that's because God had a plan and it was classified. It was top secret. If the enemy understood all the ins and outs of how authority on this planet worked and what a man could do operating in that authority, he'd have never crucified Jesus. Because he would have known that he didn't have the authority to crucify an innocent man. He'd have known that. But he didn't. This is a principle that is commonly inherent to the text of the Old Testament. The law is truth, but it is not all the truth, as it is veiled. The gospel was there, but it was hidden to be revealed in the last days. Jesus called these things the mystery of the kingdom in Mark 4. And he said unto them, unto you it is given to know the mystery of the kingdom of God. But unto them that are without, all these things are done in parables. Mark 4, 11 through 12. The word kingdom refers to authority, to the exercise of dominion. Exactly how authority worked and how a man could use it to defeat Satan was a closely guarded secret from the foundation of the world. So we see two reasons why, we see two keys in the Old Testament as to why certain things were veiled or hidden. Okay, one was because of the hardness of man's heart, and two was because of the mystery of the gospel. Is everybody with me so far? Okay. Now I'm going to give you an example of what I'm talking about. Everybody heard of Moses and the 10 plagues, right? 10 plagues of Egypt. Well, the last plague was the death of the firstborn, correct? In Exodus 12:23, it says this. For the Lord will pass through to smite the Egyptians. And when he seeth the blood upon the lintel and on the two side posts, the Lord will pass over the door and will not suffer the destroyer to come in unto your houses to smite you. Now remember, what we're talking about here is God taking responsibility for evil in the Old Testament. So let me ask you a question. Looking at this verse, can everybody see this? Who's coming in the houses to smite them? Okay. That's pretty clear, right? Now look at Exodus 12, verse 29. And it came to pass that at midnight, the Lord smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt. Who smote the firstborn in the land of Egypt? But wait a minute, I just thought it was the destroyer. I'm confused, somebody help me. I certainly am, Marge, that's right. You see, God, we know God didn't kill him because he just told us that the destroyer did it. Isn't that right? But here, he's taking responsibility for it. I'm not lying to you. It's right there in black and white, or, well, black and yellow. This is an Old Testament principle. Everybody say principle. This is an Old Testament key. Everybody say key. Jesus said he gave us the keys of the kingdom of heaven, the authority and dominion of God. This is one of those keys. The Old Testament is full of places where God takes responsibility for something as the creator. As the creator, because he is ultimately responsible for what happens on this planet, because he foresaw it. He knew everything that was going to happen on this planet. I don't even actually like the word foresaw. I like to view God as living outside of time. Anybody in here into science fiction? I know you are. I'm going to tell on you, Stargate Watcher. I love science fiction. I just love science fiction. There's a lot of episodes in Star Trek and Stargate and stuff like that about time. And so I've thought about it quite often. But I like to view God as outside of time. If time is like a spherical thing, which they say the universe is, God's outside of it. If time is a sphere, which they also theorize, God's outside of that too. It's not that God sees what you're going to do. It's that God's already there. He's already seen you do it. See, it's not so much that God is predestinating your life for you, as that God's already at the end of the time after you've done it, and he saw what you did. I'm not trying to confuse you. I'm just saying that's how I like to view it. It makes sense to me. If God's stuck in time and he's foreseen what I'm doing, then that leaves me no choice. But God's not stuck in time. He's outside of time. But this is a principle. God takes responsibility for things as the creator, because when he created this earth, he was already at the end of it, and he saw everything that was going to happen. So he takes responsibility as the creator, because by creating this world and giving man free choice, he allowed that to happen. It was within his permissive will. But it wasn't in his perfect will. So God takes responsibility for things in the Old Testament all the time. The Bible's full of cases where God, as a matter of fact, this is kind of funny, I was trying to cheat kind of when I was doing this study and find a website that would give me some examples of where the Bible said God killed some people, because I could remember some in my head, but I couldn't remember exactly where they were at. So I was surfing through the internet, and I ended up at an atheist website. And they had done some research. Boy, it put some Christian research to shame that I've seen. I don't know how many years they spent on this, but they put together a list of every time in the Bible that God killed somebody, or that it said God killed somebody. They had a very long, long list of it, and of course they had their own interpretation of that. But it was very interesting to me that the people that put this website together used that as an excuse to not believe in God. They used that as an excuse not to believe in God. And once I read what they had written there and their interpretation of it, well, if I looked at it from their point of view, I'd have had to agree with them. But see, I know better. I know that it's not my God that's out killing people. It's not my God that's out destroying people. Here it said the destroyer killed the firstborn. Well, who's the destroyer? The thief cometh not but to kill and to steal and to destroy.